Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have Leslie Boyd from Asheville, North Carolina. And Leslie founded Western North Carolina Health Advocates. And I'm going to let her tell her story in the interview. But she is another mother whose life was transformed by the tragic and unnecessary loss of a child. And stay tuned and we'll hear Leslie's story. Leslie Boyd, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And we have very similar stories. And you reached out to me on Facebook, and we became Facebook friends. And I was I'm always intrigued by how I don't know if this. I'm going to ask you to tell your story in a second. But
before
my son was killed in Iraq, I always thought that if I lost a child, that would be also the end of my life. And it was the end of it was the end of my way of life, but not the end of my life.
Yeah.
And I would look at people like Candy Leitner, who founded Mothers Against Drunk Drivers,
mm-hmm.
and John Walsh, you know, who founded the Adam Walsh Foundation. I would look at them and I'd think, how could they do that? You know, they must be like superhuman people. I would have to go to bed for years on heavy tranquilizers or something if something happened to one of my children. So, but of course, that's not what happened. So tell your story about what has brought you here today.
Well, my son, Michael, who was born on my 22nd birthday, had birth defect, and that birth defect would leave him extremely vulnerable to colon cancer. But, of course, a birth defect is a pre-existing condition. Now, we knew there might be a problem, and my doctor advised me to have an abortion. I chose, and I use that word very carefully, I chose not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a remarkable child, incredibly bright, really funny, severely ADHD, and he got into drugs and alcohol as a teenager, sobered up when he was 22, and we discovered when he was 22 and off our insurance that he had a 1 in 4 chance of developing colon cancer and that he would need a colonoscopy every year. Well, he was able to get that when he lived in New York. The doctor was willing to bill him.
Uh-huh.
But when he moved to Savannah, the doctor there refused to bill him and told him he wanted cash. So when Michael got sick, he went to the emergency room and they gave him laxatives when his problem was a malignant tumor blocking his colon.
Yeah.
Nothing was done for him until he weighed under 110 pounds. He was 6 feet tall. He was vomiting fecal matter and his kidneys had already shut down.
Oh.
He was hours from death. And they put him in the hospital. It took them 5 days to stabilize him for surgery. And by then, the cancer was stage 3. They almost killed him twice more in the year after that. And we were able to get him an appointment at Duke University Medical Center. And they adopted him because they knew to send him back to Savannah would mean death within weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us 2 more years with him. Now, when he died from injustice. He died from neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, somebody was dying in the United States every 12 minutes from lack of access to health care. And the very people who scream about, oh, this is unconstitutional, this new health care law is terrible, many of these are the same people who call themselves pro-life. Well, I want to know, what about my child's life? He was very, very dear to me, even though he didn't matter to these doctors in Savannah. And I miss him every moment of every day. And really, the only thing that keeps me going is to be out there hollering that everybody deserves health care. Everybody deserves access. It should be a basic human right. And if you're going to call yourself pro-life because you think every baby needs to be born, then you need to think about every life deserves to be saved when it gets sick. Mm-hmm. And I have called congressmen anti-life in their, you know, in their presence. I stood up and said, you are not pro-life, you're anti-abortion, and there's a huge difference. And I always hold up a picture of my son when I say it. Because now, you know, I spent last summer, summer before last, following Republican members of Congress around to their town hall meetings to ask them if they considered themselves pro-life. And if so, why did they keep voting against the Affordable Care Act, which is saving, which has the potential to save tens of thousands of lives a year? And, you know, the answer was usually something like, oh, it's a bad bill. And I would have to say, no, sir, it's a law. It's not a bill. It's a law. So, you know, I have no problem getting up in somebody's face because I've already lost the most precious thing any parent can lose. So, and I think you probably feel the same way. I mean, what can you do to me that's any worse than taking my child?
Right.
Nothing. You can throw me in prison, you can torture me, nothing is going to be any worse than losing my child. And, you know, he has a brother who's just had horrible, horrible emotional problems since Mike died. It's really, he's doing better, but it's so sad, you know, that somebody who saved so many lives as a drug and alcohol activist, I mean, he didn't do this professionally. You could knock on his door at 3 a.m. and say, I need to sober up, and he would bring you in and help. Mm-hmm. This is just who he was. And after he died, so many people told me that he had saved their lives and told me how he had done it. And I wonder now, what about those lives that he's not there to save today? What happens? You know, there's ripples, you know. It's not just the one person. It's the people they loved and the people they may have helped who aren't going to be helped now. It's just wrong. And when we can say it's okay to let somebody die, we are not a good society. We're certainly not a Christian society.
Well, so, we definitely, you know, same thing goes with our family and the loss of Casey. But, you know, it's millions. It's been millions of people throughout the trajectory of this, you know, country that have been unnecessarily killed for whatever reasons, you know, lack of access to health care, lack of access to housing, to healthy food.
Exactly.
In
Buncombe County, North Carolina, every year we lose an average of 20 people on the street.
To freeze to death. Or they starve, or, you know,
exactly.
They
die from exposure.
Right.
They die. I mean, you know, and then we send people to war and kill them. And now we learn that we torture people.
Well, we always knew that.
Well, I know, but now it's official.
Like,
now we
I'm
can't
not surprised
pretend
that this happened. But and the thing is too with the homeless issue. Most of that is caused by lack of access to mental health.
Yes,
and
very much of that. More than half of it.
That's a huge problem. Or veterans.
And, you know, as a newspaper reporter, I used to cover these issues.
Yeah.
I used to cover health care, access to health care, mental health care. I won national awards for some of the stuff I wrote about. And nothing changes. You know, people get all upset. And the state will change its policy, and 6 months later, the policy's back to the way it was before. People are still being denied care, still dying. I came back to work. I was still a reporter after Mike died. I went back to work, and there was an email saying that 3 young men had died in the last couple of months from being released from a mental hospital without a discharge plan. One of them was released to a homeless shelter that had been closed for 6 months. And, you know, my editor said to me, that story might hit you a little close to home. And I said, that's why I need to do it.
Yeah.
You know, these young men died from injustice just the way my child did.
And then in Los Angeles, the emergency rooms were just like putting people in taxis and telling them to go to, telling the taxis to take them to like a corner or take them to the mission and just let people off. And they'd getting off in their hospital gowns.
The day we found out that nothing more could be done for my son, I drove to Raleigh, which is where he was. It's about 4 hours from Asheville, where I live. And I was in the hotel room that night, and I got a call from a colleague saying that they needed some of my sources for to comment on a story about a man who died because he was released from the hospital. He wouldn't leave. The police had to come and get him, and they put him in a jail cell where he died of pneumonia.
Yeah.
And I think of him this time of year, you know, it gets cold out and people die. And I think of that man, you know, all the time. It's just so wrong the way we call ourselves a Christian nation. And nobody seems to believe it when you talk about how many people die from all of these injustices. And people just say, well, you know, Jesus said there'd always be poor people. And Jesus didn't say it dismissively.
No.
Meaning take care of them.
He also said, heal the sick, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit the
Whatever you do to the least of these, you do also to me. And I keep telling people that. I try to live my life according to that. You know, I deal with a lot of very poor people, people who, even if they have access to health care, they're socially very isolated, and we try and get volunteers who can be with them an hour or two a week just to give them somebody to talk to and somebody to help them develop self-advocacy skills. This stuff is very important. If you give somebody but no information to go with it, they're still going to get sick and die.
Right, we still, this might be a good point to tell people about your organization and your website and how they can get more information about your advocacy work.
Well, about 6 weeks after Mike died, we put up a website called Life O Mike, and we asked people to tell their stories. A few months after that, I left the newspaper business because I was under so much pressure to tell the, quote, other side of the story, which was a lie.
Uh-huh.
And so I founded what is now Western North Carolina Health Advocates. And we have a website where I blog about healthcare issues, and that is WNCHealthAdvocates.org. And I also have another blog called LettersFromTheLeft.com. And that's where I blog about issues other than health care. Mm-hmm. Because there's just so much going on, and I don't understand how, you know, I feel like I'm standing on a street corner screaming like one of these crazy evangelists, you know, and nobody's listening.
To carry
I'm sure
on
you
the
feel
Christian,
the same way.
To carry on the Christian theme, crying, was that a voice crying out in the wilderness?
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly the way, you know, I've been feeling lately, too. Leslie, what was I going to? Oh, I was just in Asheville last year.
I didn't get to see you. I tried to come out to see you, and I couldn't get there.
I've been there several times, but it's a wonderful community. I was there for
the National
War Tax Resisters Coordinating Committee, a national conference, and you have a lot of really great activists there in
we
Asheville.
We do, and we have now the Mountain People's Assembly, which is an outgrowth of Reverend William Barber's Moral Monday and Historic Thousands on Jones Street, which, you know, has, it's, when Reverend Barber came to Asheville, the first time he came, we had over 10,000 people come out and see him.
Whoa.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with Reverend Barber, you should blog. I mean, you should Google Moral Mondays. I was arrested with the Moral Monday crowds. My charges have since been dropped. That's my Christmas letter this year. The charges have been dropped.
Uh-huh.
About the only interesting thing that happened. But, you know, we need to get out there. And I don't mind putting myself on the line. As I said, what are you going to do to me? Like you just, there's nothing. I hear nothing. And that's why they don't like me. That's why they're scared of both of us, because we have nothing more to lose.
Exactly. You do become fearless, because I think we have gone through fire, and we came out the other side. And when you, if you could survive that, then you can literally survive anything.
I think so. I was so mad when my son's heart stopped and mine didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I just, I don't think I had really even articulated it in my head,
right. But
I couldn't imagine living beyond when he died. And when he died and I was still sitting there, I was mad.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it was the day before I went to Crawford the first time in August of 2005. I was in Dallas at the Veterans for Peace Convention. And one of my friends, whose husband was in the military at the time, she was doing an interview of me. And I think what she said was, like, so cathartic for me. She told me that Casey's death gave birth to his new mom.
Yes.
And I was...
Absolutely.
That was an amazing catharsis moment for me.
Yeah,
when she
because
said that.
You are not the same person. I mean, if there had been no way to prevent my son's death, that's one thing. But it was preventable.
Mm-hmm.
He was neglected. He was killed.
Absolutely. My son's death was unnecessary.
It's voluntary manslaughter.
Right.
He was neglected and he died.
Right.
And, you know, I had written to the doctor several times, you know, and once on Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving after my son died, Mike's favorite holiday was Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I emailed this doctor and I said, look, I want to know, you know, I'm just curious, how do you look yourself in the mirror in the morning?
Right.
How do you live with yourself knowing that your neglect allows people to die? Does life really mean that little to you? It's an intellectual curiosity. I want to know how you live with this. And, of course, I never heard from him.
Right.
But I really want to know how any doctor can live with that.
Being a doctor, is a tough responsibility, but there's a difference between the normal course of events, like you said, and then criminal neglect.
Yeah, and when I called the hospital after my son died, and I said, I don't want to sue you because I don't want you in my life, but I think I deserve an apology. And they wouldn't apologize.
That would be admitting fault, and then you could sue them.
You know, I just said, okay. I said, if you want to apologize, I will be back in Savannah within 6 months holding a picture of my dead son for the TV cameras. And the ethics person at Memorial Health System laughed at me.
What?
Yeah.
Aww.
Well, it was kind of a derisive, you know, chuckle.
Uh-huh.
And she said, oh, really? You know, and I said, yeah, really? Well, 4 months later, we had our first healthcare rally in Savannah, and we had 3 TV channels out there. And so I kept my promise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't, you know, it was Memorial Health. And I said, you know, you can sue me for saying that doctors at your hospital caused his death, but I have his medical records. I have where the doctors wrote multiple times, patient needs a colonoscopy but can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also have when the doctor finally did do a colonoscopy, he didn't tell my son that his colon was completely blocked. And I have that in the records also, that he couldn't finish the procedure because the colon was blocked. I said, so, you know, if I tell the truth and you want to sue me over it, I'll drag your name through the mud. I have no problem with that. You know, don't tell me that, oh, well, this kind of stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people die. People die in war. You know, people die in war. People die in illegal, immoral wars. That doesn't make it right. Just because your government sends you there doesn't make it right. It doesn't make the war right.
Right.
It's there's so much wrong going on. And you know, I feel like there's not enough of us trying to change it, but I'm still not going to give up.
Have you, when exactly did Michael die?
He died April 1st, 2008, and we believe he chose April 1st as April Fool's Day.
Uh-huh.
His best friend eulogized him as a jackass. And everybody burst into laughter and applause because he was. He was a great practical joker. He had a very twisted sense of humor. When he found out that he had been vomiting fecal matter, whenever anybody said after that something tasted like crap,
mm-hmm.
Michael would say, I'm the authority on that. And then he would taste it, and he would say, no, not so much. You know, so he never lost his sense of humor. He was an amazing human being.
Aww. So,
the world lost a remarkable person, and that happens way too often. It's still happening. When we don't expand Medicaid in North Carolina, every day 6 to 8 people die. Every day. You know, and when I say this to legislators, they just look at me like, yeah, so.
And this is the problem I have with the ACA. And I was telling you that, you know, many of us oppose it from the left. We're not teabaggers.
Yeah.
We're not teabaggers and any
can't even
come close to
being teabaggers.
No, it does
not go far enough.
Teabaggers.
It absolutely does not go far enough.
It just should.
But it's a step in the right direction.
It should have been blanketed everybody with coverage. There would be no question at that point that this, you're
right.
A citizen of the United States. You have immediate access to health and mental health and physical health,
exactly.
Healthcare. And so it's still, too many people are still falling through the cracks, just like you said.
Yeah.
Why are people
yep.
still dying? Because they don't have access to healthcare. You know, 30
it
million
shouldn't
people
happen
at least.
To a single soul.
Yeah, at least
and
30
you know,
million people uncovered. People are still.
What kills me is when people say, oh, we can't afford it. And I say, really, let me tell you something. It would have cost us about $1,000 a year to give my son a colonoscopy, skip
mm-hmm.
the college, keep him working and paying taxes. I said, instead, we said no to him. He got cancer, and we paid $1 million for his care before he died.
And I think I think people are still paying those exorbitant kinds of co-pays,
yeah.
And it was a handout to insurance companies and HMOs.
It really was. But
so,
there are people whose lives are being saved.
And yeah, and
that's
exactly
it was
right.
a step in the right direction, and now we need to build on it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
And
I think for people like your son, definitely, and we can't say, oh, we don't want it because it didn't save everybody's life, but I'm not so sure that it is a step in the right direction because now, you know, when are we ever going to get a universal single-payer health care when now we have the changing of the guard in Washington, D.C., where we have now a Republican Congress. Totally
oh, I know,
Republican
I know.
Congress.
Well, you know what? They're gonna do their best to defund it and dismantle it. And if they succeed, we will get single payer, I think.
But how would that happen? How would we get single payer if they defund the ACA? And I don't understand why Republicans aren't supporting it because it was a Republican written bill.
Yes, but it was pushed through Congress by Democrats. And,
so
you know, by a woman and a black
like
man.
It's just a big game in Washington, D.C. It's a
yes,
big game
yes.
when our lives are at stake all the time.
Exactly.
All the
They're
time.
Playing chess with human life just like they've always done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I did an analogy as a senior in high school that the Vietnam War was nothing more than a chess game with our children being used as the pawns.
Uh-huh.
And nothing's changed.
I watched a movie last night called 7 Days in May. It was in the 60s, and made in the 60s. It was about the military overthrow of the U.S. government. And the fascist general who was trying to overthrow the government, played by Burt Lancaster, said, you know, because of you civilians, we have to go through this every 20 years where, you know, we have to go to war. And then you forget about us for 20 years. Then you shove us into war again. So, Leslie, I want to make an invitation to you. Next March 18th to the 21st, the Soapbox People's Network and Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And by the way, we would love to run your blogs on the Soapbox People's Network.
Oh, great.
But if we were having an action in Washington, D.C. called Spring Rising, so we would we would love to have you come up. Is it up for you? Yeah. We would love to have you come up and hang out with us. And
I would love to do that.
Come with your picture.
I love me some subversives, you know.
Yeah. Come with a picture of your son and your cause and your energy. And because like us, you've connected these dots.
Yeah. And it's a horrible way to have to connect these dots, but you know, I carry Mike's picture with me everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
And I show people. He was very cute. He had the most mischievous eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I carry this picture with me everywhere I go. And I say to people, you know, why was his life not worth anything? Why was his life not worth saving? If you can answer that and make me believe it, I'll just stop doing what I'm doing. Yeah. But nobody's ever answered that.
Well, have people told you to get over it?
People have told me a lot of things.
Yeah. I know.
You know, get a grip, get over it. People die, you know, other people have lost kids. And the thing is,
what makes you so special? That's what people tell me. People die in war all the time. What makes you so special?
I'm not special. Mike was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, the fact that his life was lost was a huge loss, not just for me. The fact, you know, when you scream about the so-called pre-born, and then you don't care what happens to somebody after they're born,
you're
not pro-life.
Right.
And that's my message is, you know, I tell legislators all the time, you are not pro-life. Don't ever let me hear you say that in public, because I will call you out.
Well,
and I do.
Just call them what they are, pro-birth.
That's all they are. They're anti-abortion, and there's a difference.
Get the kid out.
Our former representative, Heath Shuler, used to call himself pro-life all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, you voted, and I told him before he voted against the Affordable Care Act, I said, if you vote against this, you are not pro-life, and I will call you out every time I hear you say it. And a few months later, he was at a small gathering, and he stood there and he said, well, as you all know, I'm pro-life. And I stood up, and I held up my picture of my son, and I said, no, sir, you are not. You're anti-abortion. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And sat back down. He was just dumbfounded. He didn't know what to say.
Well, I lost so many friends. I live in California. But I live in a very conservative community,
Robinson
Air Force Base, and I lost so many friends because Casey was killed on April 4th, 2004, and that was an election year, and all my friends voted for George Bush. I was like, how can you do that? You know, he lied us into these wars. Your dear friend Casey is dead because of it. You know what they told me? Well, he's pro-life.
You know, I had a friend who said that, and she said, well, I held my nose and voted for George Bush because of all the unborn. And I said, what about the already born who are dying in Iraq and Afghanistan? What about the already born who are dying for lack of mental health care or, you know, all these other things that are happening? What about the hungry? You know, I don't understand how you can be so involved, you know, in wanting to save a bit of protoplasm that will become a human being that will what? Die in a war?
Right.
They want these babies born because they're cannon fodder, and those that aren't cannon fodder, well, they'll wind up in our huge slavery system called prison.
Or called low wage, meaning, less jobs, just slaving away.
Yeah, serving the wealthy. They'll wind up serving the wealthy in some way.
Right.
And that's what they want them for.
Well, absolutely.
That's
why education sucks in this country too. Look at us.
Yeah.
All the topics that we've covered, Leslie, in this short amount of time, but we are almost running out of time. And I really appreciate your passion and your, the intelligence and passion and love that you bring to this issue. Did you ever see, you must have seen Michael Moore's Sicko.
You know, I couldn't see it because I lived it.
Oh, okay.
Because I could not bring myself to see it.
Same way I felt like with Fahrenheit 9/11.
Exactly.
Watch
now
it,
I left the theater
really
shaking with anger
yeah.
after Fahrenheit 9/11,
and
I can only imagine how you would have felt watching that.
My other son watched it right when it came out, and it came out shortly after Casey's death, and.
Yeah.
And my son was 19 at the time, and he came home and sat on my lap and sobbed.
Yeah. There was one moment in there where a woman whose son had died.
Yeah, Lila.
Was
she
walking,
became a friend of mine.
She was walking across a park. I can't remember what park it was, but she fell to her knees with grief.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I would not fully understand that. I mean, I understood it, but not internally until 4 years later when my son died.
Not in a visceral
And
way,
there are days I don't have the strength to do anything, you know, and it's because it's grief, you know, it's injustice, and I get angry. And yes, I'm nonviolent. I believe in peaceful solutions, but I'm angry.
Uh-huh.
I can still get angry.
I'm nonviolent up to the point of self-defense. And then, I mean, we don't go usually to cause trouble, but, you know, I certainly believe in defending our, our person,
yeah.
the people we love and our communities and things like that. Leslie, tell me and my listeners one more time. Your website and how they can, if they have any questions, if they could get a hold of you.
Sure. My email is Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, at WNCHealthAdvocates.org. And our website is www.WNCHealthAdvocates.org. And the email is on that website as well. And just email me if you'd like to get onto our email list. The PayPal is there for anybody who wants to donate because we're always, as you know, money is not easy to come by.
No,
so,
I know that.
You know that.
Yeah.
So, anybody who wants to join in the fight, I'm leaving this fight feet first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will not stop.
Well, thank you, Leslie. And again, and I want to wish your family, you know, happy holidays. And I know it's a hard time of year, but I take comfort in life and the struggle.
I do too.
And I hope you do too.
I do. I have other family. I have friends. And I'm so fortunate in that my friends are so supportive. And they never seem to tire of hearing Michael's stories over and over again. So I know I'm lucky.
Well, Leslie,
so,
I'm just sending you all of the what do you call it? Because I'm not Christian or religious. All of the blessings of the universe. And thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. And we'll be in touch about...
Well, thank you.
We'll be in touch about hooking up with the People's Network.
Please.
People's Network.
I am really excited about that. And thank you for all you do.
Oh, thank you, Leslie. It was great to talk to you and get to know you a little bit better. And
okay.
I'm sure we'll be seeing each other soon.
You bet.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So, thank you. Okay, bye.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you learned something, and I hope it inspired you to check out more information about Western North Carolina Health Advocates and Leslie's story and her writings. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, Dee Dee Miller, my assistant, and my sister. She's also the production assistant on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'd like to thank Leslie Boyd for being our guest and for her work. And I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.